shit's fire.
This is a fucking banger.
Ladies and gentlemen, cats, snakes, dogs, chicken, elderly people, workers, and twerkers.
Damn.
Absolute.
I don't give a fuck.
It's the ruckus. What the fuck you expect?
I body slapped my wife, my nigga, man.
Okay, before I even give you this introduction on yourself, I'm going to give you a heads up on my show, because I see your show, and I'm going to put this on the episode because I always give people an introduction. I see your content, and you always have like this real, like, wholesome, even though you have no filter, it's very wholesome and very clean. I am the complete opposite, and the fact that I have to tell you this on my show, because if people go through my episode, I'm just a rambling maniac with a whole bunch of cuss words, so I'm going to try to keep it to a minimum with my cussing, because you're in the building, so I'm going to try to show some class, and, you know, not to show too many too many and rationalities around me, but it might pop up.
That's fine.
Depending on how passionate I get with the conversation.
That's okay. Thanks for the heads up. We're good.
Yeah, because I have a TV show out here also, and I have to keep it real PG. And on my radio show, I have to keep it extra PG, which is insane because my boss wants to kill me on the content of the music that I have. So when I have like people on the show actually talking, he wants me to stick it there because I don't give that much of a headache in the background. But when I put my music for the week, he just wants to hit me with a pillow. he wants to kill me. And the podcast is all I have. The podcast is all I have where I could just like
this is your outlet. Yeah,
I could just rant like a maniac. So just a heads up, we have a couple of F-bombs out there. So you tell your church committee, look, that's just his persona. And this is the way we're starting. Good. So this is the way we're starting our introduction. This is the Ruckus Podcast, Organized Chaos. This is your boy, Cuban Viking, in the building. And, you know, I'm doing something special in the month of March. You know, being that it's Women's History Month, last month I did Black History Month, so now I'm doing it Women's History Month. And I got a second lady in the building. Shout out to Britt, who was able to open up the set for me last week, drop a lot of gems, you know, involving entrepreneurship and running your own business. And this year has been long overdue because I've been trying to have this young lady here for like the past year, but we just keep missing each other. But we follow each other heavy on Instagram. And she just keeps bringing content after content after content. And it's like no filter. You know, it's like Henny with no chaser. She gives it to you direct. And it's like, it's very, very, very informative. And it's like, if you don't like it, you might as well just get out of there because she's about to hurt feelings in a nice way. Except when she gets very stern and there's a certain topic that she wants to talk in that, you know, seems to trigger the Cuban community, which triggers myself. So we got Day in the building. What's going on? Thank AKA Spanglish. You. Spanglish generation. So yes. We're going to speak in English, Spanish, and Spanglish in the building right here. So we're going to have a whole lot of fun here. Everything. Oh, daggone thing. What's going on, girl?
Oh, we're good, bro. We're good. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. This is good.
Yeah, long overdue.
I know.
Funny story. Before we get to talking, so I did an episode a couple of weeks ago through YouTube, Cubano del Mundo.
Yeah.
And I did an episode with the professor Andres Abugenke. So I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Yeah.
Okay, so I did an episode. Shout out to the professor. He gave me a whole new following of people that I wasn't even going to expect. So big shout out to him. So I had a whole list of emails. So I had to try to, like, you know, respond and add as a friend, et cetera, et cetera. But I had one particular person who was actually, she went through my whole content and she loved it. And she's like, you know what? Like you just bringing it. And I just love the fact that, you know, it's an outsider from Florida that's Cuban, you know, giving awareness. And it's like this girl named Spanglish something, Spanglish generation something. And I'm like, Spanglish generation. Yes. I love her content. I mean, if you could have her on the podcast and you have to have content, you guys will kick butt. I'm like, well, little do you know, we have a little surprise for you, my friends. But I know once she catches this episode, she's going to be very excited.
Awesome. Yes. So
we have fans. So overall, again, how you doing? How's life treating you down there?
I'm doing good.
How's the temperature treating you out there?
It's nice. Today was nice in Miami. Like, we had nice meaning like sweater weather. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was sunny out for a bit, but now it's back to maybe like high 60s, low 70s. So that's really comfortable. I wish it would be like this all year.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, right here, we're like in our high 30s, you know, low 20s. We had snow here. We had snow here on Tuesday. You know, we had a good strong 8 to 12 inches. My shoveling game is so strong.
Oh, the snow.
That's been my depression out here in the streets. So I've been shoveling like a madman, helping out old ladies. So
yeah. Yes, and they're beautiful in pictures. I don't know how you do it.
Well, I've been up north all my life, so I'm already accustomed to it. Now I hit a certain age that I gotta get the hell out of here and just meet all the nutty, crazy Cubans in Florida. It's long overdue now. I gotta get the hell out of here.
Yeah, you do.
And get my Cuban on.
Yeah.
So let's get this thing going. Dave, tell us about yourself. First and foremost, before you talk about yourself, how the heck you got your nickname Spanglish Generation? Let's start off with that. I was interesting. How did that pop off? How you able to give your nickname Spanglish?
I just came up with it because I always speak Spanglish and I could never, I mean, never say never. I mean, I can if I concentrate and I think about my words. But when I'm in my like element, in my environment, I mix up both languages and people always, you know, found that to be interesting. Now, I'm not the only one who does that. Like, you know, a lot of people, most people, right? Like we all do it. And so it's kind of strange for people who only speak one language. When you do it, it's like, what are you doing? Because suddenly there's a word in there they missed or a phrase that, you know, went over their head. And Spanglish is just something that I identify with. And just generation, because it's a whole bunch of us, you know, that do it. Like, and sometimes we're made to feel like we're those kids that grew up here and, you know, we get everything mixed up, but it's a whole bunch of us. And it's not just one or two.
I hear that 100%. Again, when I did the professor's show, he did mine first because I was trying to get him on my show. I wasn't expecting him to go on his. So when I did his, he like just loved the interaction when he was doing, when we was doing or whatever. And he was like, I would love you to come to my show and, you know, tell your part of your story and tell your life. And I'm like, you want me to speak Spanish? I haven't done it in 3 years. I just moved to a white neighborhood. I just lost all my Latinidad. Once I went to that place, I just sold out.
I can't.
The only time I speak Spanish is with my family. He's like, no, it'll be great. I'll help you flow, whatever the case may be. But, you know, I did the show and, you know, I flowed with it very well. There were certain times that, you know, I was losing the gist within the conversation. I had to get my Spanglish on, but he helped me power through it. And I know in the Latin community, you know, if you don't speak Spanish or you miss a couple of words, they'll be like, este chico not even cubano like that. He don't even miss a couple of words right there. So, I didn't have to go through that. I had a lot of support. So thank you for being very nice to me, Cuban community in Florida. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
So give us a brief intro of yourself. Like, where did your life begin?
I was born in Cuba. I came to the United States when I was 8. My parents came. My dad's a pastor. I grew up in a pastor's home. And he came from Cuba through like a somewhat of a miracle. It was only about 8 families that came the way that he came. 8 clergy families during the late 80s. I grew up here in Florida, South Florida. I have 2 kids, married. I love Miami, though it gets annoying. I love to write. Poetry is my passion. And I love to talk, if you haven't noticed that. That's my thing.
All. Not at all. I couldn't even miss it. You talk? Hell out of here.
That's my thing. I love to talk. I love to communicate. But I like to say something just beyond words. You know, I like to communicate feelings and stories and emotions. And I think that the power of word, whether it's written or spoken, it's underrated. And in today's world where everything is just said, you know, bluntly, we lose the taste for what it feels like to listen to something and read between the lines, you know, and look for a deeper message. Like that's somewhat lost. And I'm a fan of that. So that's why I appreciate poetry so much. And I don't do enough of it anymore, at least publicly, you know, but I'm always like secretly writing in my journal and stuff. But that's not something that I give up easily.
That's dope. You know, I would have never thought you were born in Cuba because I don't hear your accent. I do hear it, but I don't hear it as thick as others.
Right.
And another thing is too, I always ask, you know, a Cuban, whether they're from Florida or even if they were born in the States, what's their story? And every time I brought a Cuban to the show, it's like, what's your story? Because I live in a predominantly Dominican neighborhood.
with a little bit of Puerto Ricans on the side. It used to be 50-50, but a lot of Puerto Ricans, they left to Orlando or right. Philadelphia. I don't know what they're doing in Philadelphia, but they're out there. And every time I come across a Cuban, I'm like, okay, what's your story? What war situation was it? Because my parents, ellos son mayoritos, so they're the Scarface kids. So they had to come over here. Yeah, they're the 80s Scarface kids. So their story was just gangster as it could come.
Right.
And I'm always find that like intriguing, whether like, you know, escaped. I mean, I know you did Nelson's episode, you know, his situation, how he went with his story. I found out his dad was Scarface baby too. You know, either you left from a boat or right now you got the front thing in Mexico or even the lottery. If you're lucky, a parent will co-sign for you. So it's always like an adventure leaving Cuba.
Always.
Always an adventure. Always. So leaving 8 years old, do you remember what it's like living in that, as the liberals call it, socialist paradise, utopia?
I do. And I'm pretty sure what I remember now is very different in my head, you know. If I were to go there now, obviously it's unrecognizable because it gets worse by the minute, you know. But I do remember, and I always say that if I would have stayed in Cuba, I would have had a really, really tough time because I am not the type of person to stay quiet about things. And that was the same when I was little. I remember being, you know, my dad, we grew up in a Christian home, and my father used to always tell me, you're not like Che, we aspire to be like Jesus. And so, you know, in Cuba, when you are doing, you know, roll calling in the morning, you have to stand in line and do that whole situation. You swear to los pioneros and you do your, you know, communist consignas. Now, I don't even know how to say that in English now. But, you know, your slogans. And it was pioneros por el comunismo, seremos como el Che. You know, pioneers for communism, we will be like a Che. Pioneers are a group of students of a certain age, and they belong to los pioneros, which they did like activities and field trips, etc. And so I never said seremos como el Che. I was never, you know, because I was taught differently. So I didn't aspire to be like a Che. And that was something that meant a lot to me at my young age. And I was taken aside and I was, you know, punished. They didn't allow me to go on any field trips. Every time that there was an activity, like where the other students were having fun, I had to be in the principal's office, and my parents were called because, you know, the school was concerned because I wasn't showing enough enthusiasm, you know, and cooperating with these slogans and these whole activities. So yes, I do remember Cuba, and I did have that particular experience, which was very bitter for a little girl, you know? And I know now that had I stayed in Cuba and kept that path, it would have not been a good story. Like, at least not a happy one.
When was the last time you went back?
I went back in 2016, was it? 2016, and I hadn't been in a while. That's the last time that I'll be back. The only reason I went is because I wanted to meet my mother-in-law. You know, my husband has his mom there, and, you know, family is sacred, and I admire those people that have sworn never to go back, even though they have their mother there or their father or their, you know, their child. And, you know, I wanted to meet her, and so I decided to go with him. And quite honestly, I'm glad I did, because I saw things about Cuba that I didn't know and that I had heard about, but even I didn't believe thoroughly because I'd never seen them. I grew up here. So to be faced with that reality was completely like, it opened my eyes to a different level. And I think that also helped me be more vocal about the situation in Cuba, because I was able to see it like as an adult. And I was heartbroken, among other things.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. My mother, when she left Cuba, she never went back. And, you know, I think the one thing that kills her of not going back there is able to bury my grandmother and her great grandmother. Where they passed a couple of years ago. And that's one of the sacrifices, as a lot of Cubans do when they come over here and they have strong beliefs. So those are the two times, like, I saw, like, my mother, like, really, really lose it. when my great grandmother and my mother. I mean, when my grandmother died, it stink because we were at a distance. I was far away from where she was at, and I couldn't even go. It was a blizzard that day, so it was a blizzard. So I know she was here by herself. I know a couple of neighbors came to consult her or came to be, but it wasn't the same. And one thing that she also mentioned that she wanted, two things. She said, I'm not going to have any kids in Goa. I don't want none of my kids to grow up in none of these circumstances. And it's best I left now than if I get older, because she would have been in jail by now. She definitely went in jail, and she has a mouth on her. She has a mouth. And just like you, it was just like you, you know, because she was like very, when it came to like making speeches and speaking on behalf of the cast, she was very vocal about it. So for whatever reason, like the teacher picked her to like do the Che poem or anything that's revolutionary. She's like, I'm not doing this shenanigans. I'm not doing it. Get my behind. I'm about to get this detention. And I guess there was these schools that they used to take these kids to that gets on the weekend that, you know, you get to see your parents or whatever the case may be. And she was caught up in that nonsense. And it got to the point that she was like, so misbehaving, they won't let her go back to see her mom. So that was like a punishment. But she's like, I don't care. I'll thug it out. I'm not doing this. You're not going to force me. But the more she kept being rebellious, the more she could get in trouble. She's like, okay, these kids getting escalated, the older I get, I know something's going to happen to me. I got to get the hell out of here. Yeah. Got to get the hell out of here. So it is insane. So when you first came here to the States, what was like the first thing that was like shell shock coming to one extreme to another?
Oh my gosh, there were so many lights. Like, we were coming on the plane, and I had been on planes in Cuba, and I'd never seen so many lights. Like, when we were flying over Miami, like coming into Miami International Airport, it looked like lit. Like, the whole city it was amazing. And I remember people started clapping. The first thing that I remember, like, that vividly in my head was gum. I couldn't believe that gum was so accessible, like bubble gum, like chewing gum, you know. And we were in a car, and in my aunt's Cadillac at the time. And I just couldn't believe it. There was air conditioning in the car. We got to my Aunt Nana's house, and there were grapes. I'd never seen grapes. There are no grapes in Cuba. There was a picture, I think it's there till this day, maybe not, of a broccoli and cauliflower on the wall. And I would look at it and I would say, what is that? You know, like, it was all so different, you know? And I think that just those little things are in my mind till this day of like the first few hours in the US. Grapes, dude, that's sad. Grapes and gum. That's like, that just tells you, you know, like the level of just separation from the world, at least in that time. Maybe now it's different because we have the internet and they have some access to the internet. But back then, dude, like, no, I was shocked.
You know, I remember a while ago when I had an aunt of mine that, you know, she went to Cuba, and before she came to Cuba, she came to our house to like, you know, give the family the hand-me-downs. And like the one thing I gave them was a PlayStation 1 video game. This is 2006, I want to say 2007, so I gave him a PlayStation video game. By then, it was already advanced. I had already had a PlayStation 3 right now, so I'm already advanced or whatever. But I remember I gave him this console video game, and once I gave that to them, like, my cousin called me, and it was, like, so grateful because they never seen such an advanced game like that. And in my head, I'm thinking, well, you're two PlayStation behind here. But that was just the thing. They were so grateful to have just something as small as that we take for granted. And it bugged me out. I gave them that. And I think I gave my cousin one of my, which I don't even know why I did that. I think I had like the Santa Claus spirit for Christmas. I gave him like my newest pair of like Michael Jordan sneakers. I'm like, here, enjoy, because I already had enough of them. It was my favorite. I don't know what gave to me. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give him my favorite one just to the Lord see that I've been a decent human being. My favorite. And, you know, he got those, and he was, like, the man on the block once he got those. Aww. And it was, like, fresh off the box. Like, I didn't even wear them. I just gave them to him, like, yo, here, I'll get them back. You know what I mean? Just hopefully, you know, if I have angels, hope he knows that I did something good for him. And there was that, and I had, I was married, at the time, and my ex-wife was Costa Rican, and she showed me a video I guess it was, I want to say it was 2016, 17, that Costa Rica did something. They sent a whole bunch of Cubans. I think it was like 1,000 Cubans they sent over there. Okay. And Costa Rica said, like, yo, we'll take them if it's getting so full in the state, the case may be. And I got to find the video. But it was a video of this dude at the supermarket. And he was asking the guy in the supermarket, like, look, like, what can I, like, first he was shocked that he saw a supermarket full of food. That was one. Then two, he was asking the owner, like, what can I get here? Like, what's my limit? Like, how much can I get out of it? And the dude, like, get whatever you want. This is unlimited. And he's like, you mean to tell me I could get what I want? He's like, yeah, it's unlimited. Like, we get more tomorrow. And, like, the dude literally started crying. Like, he got emotional because he's never seen a place that has just surplus of food. Yeah. And just to be grateful, like, the owner, you know, he said, like, the first thing he ever bought, okay, maybe he told the story. And, like, on the first trip on that supermarket, like, everything was on the house, and the dude started crying even more.
Oh, my God.
You know, and as a token of appreciation, he wanted to, like, do something for, like, the family because he was coming back. He was coming up to the States. He wanted to do, like, he was a painter. So he wanted to do something, like, to, like, decorate his supermarket. And he did a mural in his backyard of his family, like, the owner's family. It was so beautiful.
Oh,
so the fact you tell me you see something as grape or see something as gum is like is incredible. My mom always tells me, you know, but now the older I get it now. Like, you Americans take things for granted. You guys don't even know what it is to be messed up. You don't even know what it has to be gone and whatever it is. So now in retrospect, I see it. I literally do see it. So it's just a sad circumstance the island has to go through.
So, yeah.
So when was when did you get your rude awakening to do your activism?
Recently, honestly, I've always been very vocal. And I've always talked about mostly spirituality, and because it was close to the situations that I was going through in my personal life. And I've always resorted to faith because of my upbringing and my personal experience. But recently, with the whole situation with El Movimiento San Isidro, Luis Manuel Otero Alcántara, and these young people in Cuba showing so much courage and making it seem possible to protest, even though they are suffering the consequences, they gave everybody, the old exile and all of us, hope that there was still hope on the island. I mean, because the hope has to begin with them and the belief that they can, you know, actually make it happen. Because if we could do all the activism we want, if they're not there saying this is what we need visibly in front of the world massively, then, you know, it's going to be really difficult for us to convince all these people who are out here trying to convince the world that socialism is the way to go and the Cuban system is the way to go. So when I saw them being so vulnerable and so, you know, with such attitude, such conviction, I said, man, like, we can't leave them alone. We need to do our part. And I spoke to a lot of people that were not Cuban and didn't speak any Spanish. And remembering my years in Arizona, there's a lot of misinformation. Some people in Arizona didn't even know that Cuba was a place where people spoke Spanish. Like, they didn't know Spanish was the main language. And and they didn't, you know, they were very, a lot of misconceptions about Cuba and what it was and what the embargo is and how it came about and how people lived and the healthcare system and free education. So I found that sometimes when you're talking to Cubans, you're preaching to the choir. When you're talking to other Latinos, which I do also, some are familiar, some aren't, but I found that we needed to be more vocal to the English speakers because there's not enough of a voice out there to tell these people that Cuba's not what they've been made to believe. You know, they've been told a lie, and here are the facts, here are the receipts. So that's where I'm like, wait a minute, yeah, this is in Spanish, but we need to translate all of this. We need to at least make it possible for whoever wants to hear, whoever, you know, this message gets to, make it possible for them to have access to the truth in their language, you know. So that's basically it.
This is why when I have my show and I always bring you know, on my radio show, when I always bring, you know, the Cuban topic issue, I made it a conscious decision to speak English to like the American public, because one of the things that I keep talking about, I spoke, is that anybody wants to hear me. I mean, every time we talk, it's like we're talking amongst ourselves, and it never passes Florida, maybe New Jersey, but nobody knows what's going on. So on TikTok, I'm a whole different person. It's like I'm militant Cuban Mike, and I'm bringing Cuban issues there. Instagram, you get the comedian side, you get the goofy side, whatever the case may be. But a lot of the videos that I post up there, it was people really didn't know. So there's a video that I have out that I post there that's got like at least, right now, I think we're like at 150,000 views in that. But one of the things that I got from people, they're like, yo, we didn't know you guys were going through that, you know, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't reach Michigan, doesn't reach North Dakota, doesn't reach Chicago, it doesn't reach the other parts of the 49 states outside of Florida and maybe New Jersey. So right. We don't know what's going on. We just thought it was this, then the third. And, you know, we want to be more informed of what's going on. And that's one thing. I mean, I appreciate, you know, the work that people in Florida do, but we have to make a conscious two things. I know we vote a certain way, but we have to get out of that conservative mind and just go to anybody's willing to hear us, because we already know conservatives know that, you know, what's going on in Cuba. So we don't need, again, it's like us talking to us. So we already know right. We need to get off that and move somewhere else. Even if, you know, because I vote a certain way. I don't vote conservative. I vote a certain way, even though I could call out the nonsense. And like, look, they could hear us. We just can't go to the extremists. If we go to the AOC and the squad department, we're going to lose. Get the ones in the middle, and then the ones in the middle could control the narrative, and they could push them over there, because it's more us than them, but the less of those people have the biggest mouth. So that's why we're not getting our point across. So I made the decision to do that. And next question. The activist bug hit you before July 11th or after July 11th? And then after July 11th, it just went on steroids when you just did what you did with your contact.
I think everybody went on steroids July 11th because we had to.
Fair enough.
We had to. But it was before. It was before. It was actually November 27th, the year prior, when everything started with the Movimiento San Isidro, and when they quartered themselves, you know, inside Luis Manuel Otero Alcántara's home. And that's where it kind of, that's what, before that, I was already doing content about Cuba in English and telling people the reality of Cuba. But then 27 de noviembre happened, and that kind of, you know, just turned my direction to that. I like turned me in that direction. And then July 11th happened, and then it was just like, you know, all over the place. Because July 11th, I think everybody just came to the call. Like, you know, everybody saw a need, and we all jumped and said, here, we have this information. And everybody just kind of shipped in. And I think that was great. We needed that.
I think what's dope about that, it wasn't Florida this time that was, you know, screaming loud, say we're going through the, was Cuba. It was the island that said, yo, we had enough. Enough is enough. We're tired of this. COVID could have been, you know, the final straw, but it was other dynamics that happened pre-COVID. Because I know when you watch, you know, the misinformed media, they'll say they're fighting over medicine and COVID, and we have evidence amongst evidence saying that is not the case. So it was funny because when that happened, I was actually in Florida on vacation when that happened. I was on vacation, and then all of a sudden it was like, breaking news, Cuba's going to a protest. Breaking news, people in Miami protesting. Breaking news, like every 15 minutes, all your local channel was really, really on it. So I called my mom, and like, mommy, esto está pasando en Florida. Yeah, I'm watching it right now on YouTube. And as, you know, again, us, the community know about it, but then I was calling my friends out in Massachusetts, like, yo, are you watching or what's going on in Florida and Cuba? They're like, no, nothing has been shown in the news. No one's been and you know, I think by like everyone, once everything started dying out, they started to show in the news, but it was like a protest in Cuba, now onto sports. You know what I'm saying? It was like a quick 30-second thing going on. You know what I mean? Even when the thing happened with the when Obama did his nonsense of not lifting the embargo, when he cut off the embargo and the wet foot dry foot thing, when he cut that off, it was like when the news hit Massachusetts, like, breaking news, wet foot dry foot is off. All right, now the weather. Bye, that's it. And I could assume once that hit in Florida, it was like a minute to minute play by play what was going on. So yeah, that's the thing that we're going through right now up here. So it's like I'm fighting you know, tooth and nail to just like bring as much awareness as I can with the little, you know, power I have with the radio show, right, and TV show. So that was my thing. And with my, you know, funny enough, my shenanigans started on November. I want to say November 20. When the hell did Castro die? 26, 27 of November. I know it was like a day before my birthday. Whenever he died, I knew it was I just laughed because he died on a Black Friday. So that's the only thing I find.
That's right. He did that.
I remember that. Yeah, he died on a Black Friday. So it was the 27th. Yeah, because my birthday was the following day. So that was when my shenanigans hit. But I remember on social media, it was like a really, it was weird. Yeah. It was really, like, in my world, it was weird because I found like this odd praise towards him. Like, he was like some kind of weird, like, hero, leader, like this perception, like he was like the little guy that stuck it to the man. And I'm like, this is not the fucking story. And I have people that I know that call me like, yo, you must feel bad that your president died and this, then a third. I'm like, no, this is not my fucking story. And I was just losing my thing. And then once I started like preaching online, it was like the people that was like, you know, in the extreme side, it was like, oh, you don't recognize your real leader. My favorite, oh, he must have, you must be a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
It was all this other stuff. Yeah, it was like, I didn't get the Gusano part. I think if somebody would have called me a Gusano and they live in Massachusetts, I would have punched him in the face. I'm preaching violence here. I don't care. So that would have been the case. But I was speaking to my mom about this, and I'm like, yo, what the fuck's going on? And, you know, I guess by then she was just like, she was just defeated. She's like, you know, it is what it is. People with a real good conscience, they know he was a villain, but you always have those people that you like romanticize the story. You know, they bring up Africa and, you know, medicine, but we know the real story. I'm like, why aren't we doing something? And like, no, I'm tired. Like, it is what it is. I'm just hoping, you know, the people, the one thing she always said to like, until it happened, like the only way the world's going to listen to us is once Cuba fights that fear and take it to the streets and finally say we had enough. Fast forward to 6 years later, that's what happened. And that's when everybody, and even when that happened, my mom even found some minutes to be like, yo, I got to talk my stuff. And it was so dope when I actually had her on my podcast, because prior to this podcast, I was like a group of us. And, you know, once they saw what happened, they had my mom on the show. And this is the one I actually fell back on. So it became like it was supposed to be a 15, 20 minute brief interview, ended up being like 2 hours. And just like you, she likes to talk a lot. So like she took over the show. So she was, there was things about her that I didn't even know that she exposed herself within,
wow,
within, you know, the show, which I didn't know. And it was like, I asked her when the show was over, like, what let you do that? She's like, yo, I got to tell my story. Because if I don't, people going to think it's sweet out here. And she took, you know, whatever pain and sorrow that she went through by that, she let it all out. It was like therapy for her. And and right after that, I will say this, fast forward, on my end, people started to get it. They got what's going on. And I think what's dope about my friends, shout out to the friends that I have, the real ones, they started hashtagging Cuba SOS, Patria Vida, like non-Cubans, like everybody that know me, they got it and they understood it.
Right.
And a lot of people listened to my mom's episode because they didn't know. So right. I think once they got that and they got that romanticization off the system, it's like, okay, it's real out here. So we gotta, you know, we gotta support our people out there. So that was the one thing that was dope about it. It brought awareness. And I've been a madman. I've been to New York, I've been to Jersey, I've been to Florida, I went to the big one in Washington. Like I met so many wonderful people out there. It's just, this took me to a whole nother realm. And then me doing this whole thing with social media, I mean, I gotta give a shout out to you because you've been reposting a good portion of my stuff and you gave me a couple of followers yourself. So 100 thank yous.
Of course. That's what we're here for. You know, we're here to just kind of bounce off each other and take the message forward. When it comes to the Cuban, with the Cuban message, that's what we need to be doing, raising awareness, telling the real stories, to having our people, like who better than our people, who better than your mom who went through so much, you know, like, and she's got her story, like everybody in Cuba's got their special crazy story. And I think they all need to be told. So the fact that you're using your platform to get those stories out, yes, yes, and yes. And we all need to be amplifying that and just kind of, you know, whenever we get a chance, like, hey, repost a story, leave a comment, just share something, like just little things. You think that it's not a big deal. Sometimes it's a huge deal. It's a huge deal because you never know that one share, who it could, who's is it going to impact? You have no idea. Like, I have people that have written to me. I have no idea who these people are. And they're like, thank you so much. Like, I had a different idea and this completely changed my mind. And I'm like, it's worth it. You know, that was worth it. Whoever shared that piece of content, thank you, because the message got to a different level. And I just, I get people who write to me that are families of political prisoners, people who, you know, fought, people who were with the revolution and then realized that was a piece of shit and they turned, you know, on it. They turned their back.
Is it a bad word?
Oh, no. Oh, do we have
got him.
And so basically, I get those people and I'm like, man, everybody has so much feeling invested in this, so much hurt, you know, so much trauma, because it's trauma, man. It's traumatic. The Cuban story is very traumatic and we hide behind the dance and the music and the culture, but the story is very painful. So I think that's very important to get our people, our loved ones to speak up. And I was thinking about doing the same thing, getting my dad, you know, to talk about what he went through as a minister in Cuba, because, you know, religion for a long time was
bad. I was gonna go to that. How did he manage to balance that out? Like, was it a secret thing? Was he, like, you know, reading a Bible in secrecy while nobody was watching? How was he able to finesse his spirituality, religion with the revolution?
In the years that he became a pastor, congregation was allowed, but it was heavily monitored. And even though, you know, certain things were still illegal, like there are pastors that were friends of his that went to prison because they were reading Christian literature in a public park. They were taken to prison and they served time for years for reading Christian literature in a public park. But, you know, we had state security infiltrated in every congregation, listening to every sermon. Yeah. Calling him in case he said something that might have been complicated or, you know, that they may have a problem with. Mm-hmm. It was very, very absurd. And all I gotta say is those people that stuck through and were faithful to their faith, whichever it was, those are some brave people. And during those times, especially, even more so, because they risked it all for their faith, for a belief. And I think that, I mean, I know there's always fear, you know, in Cuba, and that's what's kept people from protesting, et cetera, the fear. But I think that if people can grab onto some sort of faith, and that's, you know, Fidel cut off all faith, religion, everything, it, like, Cuba is an atheist state, you know. It's just recently that he's allowed, you know.
He kept Santeria, though. He sure kept that Yoruba thing going.
Good rate.
I wonder why.
For a while, it wasn't a lot. For a while, it was low key, but of course they allowed it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, but if you think about it, no matter what it is, even if it's just faith in yourself, in your abilities, faith is gone in Cuba. People don't have any confidence of a future. They don't have faith in tomorrow. And so I think that seeing those people of faith go through years and years of oppression, of having to hide to go congregate, you know, and do their meetings and stuff. Seeing those people go to prison and come out and still be faithful and still, you know, proclaim like their beliefs, it's possible. But it's gone in Cuba right now, you know, and people don't have that. And so I just know all I can hold on to is the fact that it's possible because it's happened before. We just need it to happen now massively. And it doesn't need to be religious people. People just need to have faith in the future that Cuba can offer. And Cuba has cut off all faith in the future, you know, and that's the sad part. The government in Cuba, the dictatorship, has made it a goal to make sure that people understand that they have no future within Cuba unless it's what they say. If they want a future, jump on a raft and go.
Or depend on them, because they'll provide it for you with a false sense that they're going to do right by you, but we all know they're not.
Right. Well, of course. Of course. Yeah. Like they give one way and one way only. If that's not the way, then you can be out. And that's what they've led Cubans to believe. And if Cubans just understand that they have the power in their hands, a lot would change. Like a lot would change.
What was the I know with certain people, which videos they went viral. Like I know Nelson, you know Nelson very well. There was the video he did that went viral. I don't know if you follow Gracia. I know the video of hers that went viral. What was yours that went viral? Because I've been trying to find it. I don't know which one that got you the notoriety that it did within, you know, what was going on, if you remember.
I'll tell you because I have them pinned on TikTok just because I don't remember them, but I have them pinned. There's one that actually was posted in 2021 in June 21st, 2021.
Oh, pre-July 11th.
Pre-July 11th.
Oh, all right.
And it's called Don't Let Cuba Be Your Example. And I was talking about Venezuela, how Venezuelans used to say, nah, we'll never be like Cuba.
We
like,
try to warn them. We try to warn them. We told them, hey,
like,
look.
Hey, look, you sure that's what you want? And they're like, yeah. We'll never be like Cuba. We just want socialism, not communism.
And Colombia's right there, tiptoeing right behind them too. So we try to warn them. We've been trying to warn them. Well, yeah. Here's the thing. When I decided to go off on this thing, I did an episode, and this the one thing that I was trying to like bring awareness to is like the racial disparity that goes on in Cuba and what the government does racially to its fellow Black Cubans. So that was my lane from the jump, because there's something with Black Americans in the revolution that they'd be like, this is for us, and we need us have this because they imperialism and colonialism and yada yada yada. And I mean, it started off with my grandfather. So before my mother, my grandfather was the one with the mouth and said, I'm not dealing with this. If I could find a way to get away from this thing, and he spoke. He went to jail, went to his nonsense, whatever the case may be, he got over here. So he was the first. And he was like, look, he lived through Batista and he lived to the Castro thing. And he's like, this system that they're trying to throw at me, I know it's not this. And if I have to like get in trouble, and he had a lot of opportunities thrown at him. And he lost it all just with talking. So he was the first one that opened his mouth. Then came my parents. And once he told me his story, I got to find a way to finesse this. And this was damn near 6 years in the making. So first of all, I live in Massachusetts. So my joke is finding a Cuban in Massachusetts like winning the freaking lottery. You got to hold tight to that mug because you don't even know, you know what I mean, where you find him at or where's the last one going to see this person. It's like the equivalent of the golden ticket from the Willy Wonka movie. So... So I was lucky to find five Black Cubans in Massachusetts, and I was able to, you know, to make a podcast episode with them, and they was able to share their experience. And that was the one that got me out of here. And I was like, look, if I get a, because the thing about it is like, I was going to put the video up and let's see what it does. But then my mom saw the episode. It's like, no, you got to, she became like my manager. Look, you got to cut. Pace, send us your friends. Your friend got sent to your other friends. You send them to Florida. Give me an episode. I'll send it to everybody. You gotta do your shenanigans and let this thing out. And yeah. I'm like, all right, because you know, I thought I was gonna get lucky because I know when you posted your video, when Nelson posted the video, I'm like, I'm gonna put it out and see what happened. You have no intentions of going viral. You're just gonna be like, right. Okay, a whole bunch of people watching me. Now that I got your ears, let me tell you more what's going on in Cuba. And you know, I just said, okay, let's see what happens. I'll roll the dice and let's see what kind of good luck I have. But it became something else. I did my initiative. I sent it to all the organizations that were in Florida. I sent it to all my friends. And that one was the one that hit. And I was good with 100 views. But it got more than that. So I'm like, okay, I guess I'll take this and run with it. So that was definitely helped out the situation. And now people are getting, you know, being more awareness of what's going on. There's people that became full-blown socialists and communists, but not because they know me. They actually know me. They're like, okay, maybe this might not be it because...
Right.
You know, I'm seeing the other side of it. And the thing about it is you do got your maniac saying like, well, that's not real socialism. I'm like, they're not going to expose yourself with real socialism. They're going to tell you the good side of it and the pros. They're going to tell you freaking cons. It's right. Like if I meet a person and they're a terrible human being, they're going to show me their terrible ways. They're going to show you they're nice to me. So that's what it is. So that's the part that gets frustrating. So I made a conscious decision to at least talk to that neighborhood because unfortunately, even though the white counterparts do talk about what's going on, they're not going to listen to them because you're not dumb. You're not this skin color. You're not going to relate to them. And I got a call for what it is. Unfortunately, white Cubans, especially in Florida, they got a terrible reputation of being racist in Florida. Got a call for what it is. So if we could change the dynamic and have other people telling your story that could be more relatable, then we could, you know, spread that message around and be like, oh, this is what it really is. This is what it looks like from our perspective. The funny thing about this, a lot of these people that claim they're this, they love Celia Cruz. They love Celia Cruz. And I'm like, do you know her freaking story outside of the music?
Even know.
Do you know what she went through with that system of, you know, her leaving, being black, going against the system, not letting her back, you know, to see her grab? Do you even know the story? And surprisingly enough, they don't know. They just know.
No,
they just know the music and that she did Sesame Street. So
it's crazy. It's so ironic that they idolized Celia and El Che at the same time.
At the same time. And the thing about it is, Che hated y'all niggas. He hated your asses. He hated y'all and he hated gay people. Because that's those two people he wanted nothing of. And the fact that black people still admire him and gay people, they're still on this weird thing that
blows my mind.
Yeah. It's like seeing a black person with a Confederate flag. I'm like, you know, that represents my friends, but it's whatever. I'll let you be great. I'll let you be great. But though, and then they're the same. They're the same one that give me crap if I have an American flag shirt. Like, that represents white supremacy. And really, do you know what you're rocking, my man? Do you really know what that represents? So that's been the constant war that I've been going at. But for the most part, it's been positive and it's been working within my favor. And the thing about it this time around, between 2016 and 2021, I always felt as though I was that guy in a soapbox just screaming and nobody was listening. Now I got a team. I got Cubans in Boston rocking. I got Cubans in New York and Jersey rocking. I damn know I got my people in Florida rocking. So now I got an army. Exactly. It is so funny because on Facebook, when I used to like go with these kind of things, it used to be 1 against 20. Now it's like 40 against 20. Now I got my army. Do you really want to? And you know, you got very, you know, passionate people telling the story. You know, you're trying to defend this. I went through this. My mom went through that. My family, how did, and they all back up. Because all you got to do is get aggressive with them and they'll definitely back up and they don't want the problems. I'm like, you know what? I'll just do with my American nonsense. And that's what we got to do now. Just be aggressive. And, you know, we got to make a conscious decision to fight and tell our story because I've been screaming at the top of my lungs. I'm at war in Massachusetts. I'm at war, whether it's the city council, the senators that are pushing the embargo. I know you posted a video, the five people trying to sign that off, Massachusetts, you know, the state representative, Jim Montgomery. I'm at war with these bastards. I think they definitely know who I am by now. So I know I'm giving them a headache, but this is the thing I've been going through, but I'm putting up a good fight and I'm just waiting for the next confrontation because it is going to happen. And once that goes in, I even told my people in New York, yo, you guys gotta come help me with this one. Cause now they're not, now they're just lying and showing their asses now.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, yeah, I'm lying. And what you gonna do about it? It's like what, one Cuban around? No, I need a team here to have that confrontation. Cause once they get that confrontation, they'll back out. They'll definitely back out. So here's my question I want to go through. How do you feel about The View?
The View.
Yeah,
so annoying, but at the same time,
I see you're such an avid fan of the show. You just like call out their shenanigans. What I do, I do enjoy. I do it because I hate that show.
I wish with all my heart that Whoopi Goldberg would have stuck to acting because I love her as an actress. I love Sister Act is like one of my favorite like movies. Sister Act 1 and 2, and I love Whoopi Goldberg as an actress. And so to have to listen to her say the things that she says, I mean, we don't have to because you have to watch it. But it's like, man, just to know, it's like, man, such a disillusion. But I think the show is a propaganda at its best. It's very divisive, and I am very surprised. I shouldn't be surprised at this point, but that mainstream actually protects that, you know? And of course, they promote all things that would help the Cuban dictatorship thrive, even though, of course, they say they're against dictatorship, etc. But it seems like they contradict each other. It seems like they see everything through a lens of victimization. They see everything through a lens of color or gender. And the world shouldn't be seen through just a lens of color or gender. There are more lenses to see stories. You know, people go through certain things, and they go through certain things not because, not only because they're Black or white or whatever color or whatever gender. They go through certain things because they are people that live in certain circumstances. And whatever color they are in Cuba, la gente está pasando hambre. They could be Black or white, but they're going through the same situation altogether. Yes, there are disparities, absolutely. And the Cuban regime makes them even worse. And whoever says that, oh, because you see the equality for Black people in Cuba, there's no equality for Black people in Cuba. Where is the equality for Black people in Cuba? So you see the propaganda and shows like The View. Yeah, very sad that they're still, you know, just spewing that on air. And they have that one conservative person on there.
Yeah, which is a beat. It's a beatdown. It's a beatdown. Four which against
not, one. That's but a beatdown. She's not really conservative. You know, it's just like conservative to just. But she agrees with everything that.
Wait, is that the Ana girl? Which Ecuadorian?
No, chick? I don't know. Ana might as well be a complete absolute liberal. She says she's a conservative, but you know she's not. They have this other girl now. I forgot who used to work for Trump. And, you know, she tries, but at the same time, how much can you try? You can try, but then you'll end up being like Meghan McCain, being the most annoying conservative person on the show, because, you know, she aside from the fact that she has a very specific, strong personality, they just never agreed with her and they always attacked her point of view. And she doesn't have a particular soft way of, you know, or convincing way of portraying a message, in my opinion, at least for my taste. But The View, yeah, in synthesis, it's annoying. It's annoying. It's very annoying.
Very, very annoying. I agree with you 100%. You know, I remember, again, when I went through my whole thing in 2016, I was like clicking, change the channels, how, you know, how people would take to the news of like Castro dying. And I remember I made the mistake of going to The View. And for the most part, it was very weird because I will say this, they were kind of sort of fair. They know that he was an evil guy, but it reminded me of like when Bernie was running. It was like, yeah, he was an evil guy, but look at the bright side. They were trying to give him an out. Yeah, they tried to give him an out. So that's the thing that annoys me. They don't call it for what it is. Because when they go to their little white supremacy rant, they call it for what it is. Police brutality, they call it for it, which is fair, but I wish they would keep that same momentum, that same energy when it comes to that. You know what I mean? Because if we go like, you know, yeah, not all cops are bad, then, you know, we're going to get an earful, you know. So they pull that. They're like, yeah, he was an evil man, but look at the bright side. Education, literacy, yada, yada, yada. And that's what Bernie did in his campaign. Like, you know, it's a dictatorship, but he gave out education, which is a good thing. And, you know, trying to give him a man an out. So,
yeah.
And it was very weird because they did that, and then fast forward, when Bernie was running, the same people that was trying to give him an out, now they were using that against Bernie. Like, how are you gonna say that it was that you know he was an evil man in education side? Like he murdered and had fire squad. I'm like, yo, chick, 6 years ago, you said something else. You were agreeing with his nonsense, but I know mainstream wasn't a fan of him, and they did anything to try to take him out. Which, you know, I was for that because I wasn't a fan of the guy. So yeah. they you know, it's a flip floppy kind of thing going on. And, you know, it's just a whole trash situation, which I wish we could, you know, give us something to give us a fair balance and don't be too extreme with the other.
They're too biased.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I get at work. I'm at war with myself, with these people, because I try to maintain my composure. Because, again, I vote a certain way, and I believe in some sort of liberalism. I can't even say it right now. The liberal bullshit. That shit. So I understand that part. I just, again, don't go to the extreme, you know. And the second you call off, they'll be like, the second you don't agree with them, you're a Trump supporter. That's the thing I get thrown at me. And just 5 minutes ago, you were supposed to champion tolerance and we're supposed to agree to disagree or trying to meet each other like halfway. And they don't do that. And that's the part that gets really, really aggravating, because now I'm seeing the hypocrisy and I'm seeing the contradiction. It's like, oh, you were just faking the funk on me.
Right.
So that's the thing that I've been at war with. So also I follow your content, and I've seen you know, certain things that you do touch upon that it gets very taboo, aka the drag queens in school, the transgender situation. I feel a certain way about it. If you catch my episodes from 2020, whatever, I'm a maniac. I sit a certain way with it. I don't give a damn. You're a man. You're born a man. I don't care how many pills you get or how many surgeries you get. You're not going to convince me. And I have a lot of crude jokes. So it, once I make it and I become mainstream and somebody comes after me, you know what it was already. It was a muscle move and that crew's trying to get rid of me. But I'm keeping that shit. I'm keeping it.
Yeah.
So, do you get any like hate mails or anything like behind the scene? Because I know I actually got some hate mails and DM stuff coming from people that don't agree with my content when I offend the world. So how do you handle those situations?
I don't get so much hate mail. I get a few messages here and there that are, I wouldn't say hateful, but, you know, strongly disagreeing with some of the things I say. It mostly goes down in the comment section, you know, And a lot of people do say, sit down with your transphobia or, stuff like that. But I just think that this shouldn't even be an argument. This is not something we need to be arguing about. And the fact that we have to argue about it and we have to actually clarify what's going on, it's really scary, to say the least. It scares me more than other things, because this is not an ideology that you have to convince people that we really live through the oppression of communism. Like, this is having to convince people that biology and science are undisputable. Like, this is having to convince people that truth is truth. And then people say, well, I have my truth. No, baby, there's truth. You have your experience that you could call your truth, but there's one truth. And when it comes to biology, that's a fact. When it comes to religion, that's debatable. We could have 1,000 truths and I could be okay with you believing that, and anybody, but that's fine. When it comes to science, numbers, formulas, that's biology, dude. Like, there's one truth and there's one fact. And the fact is that we have two genders, and that's just it. Now, do you want to identify as XYZ? You can, but that does not legitimize biologically that you can become that, you know? So I think it's very sad that we're going through having to explain that. And the fact that more and more people come out each day putting the prefix trans in front of so many things, like trans age. Now you could identify as a different age. Transracial. So now
I want that so bad. Look, if I get the money I'm looking for, I'm trying to be a Chinese guy, because I want to be a ninja and make Chinese food. I'm trying to get there. I'm going there, damn it.
You know what I'm saying?
Asian mob. I'm praying for this. I will go for that. Done a couple of black flips.
It's happening. Like, though, people are identifying as Asian, and so it's ridiculous, you know. And I just think that it's opening doors to foolishness. And once you install in the minds of people that they can actually challenge nature, like actual, but then you've lost it, because you are really just creating delusion. Like, you're really creating people that really believe they can challenge nature, and nature cannot be challenged. Like, nature's gonna kick our ass.
It's kicking our ass already. That's the thing.
I'm saying, if we keep going with this nonsense in 20 years, that's it. We're gonna just like our, we're gonna eliminate ourselves.
100%. You know, one of the things that I okay, you live in Florida, so that makes you deal with DeSantis. And I ain't gonna front, he's growing on me. That little bastard is just growing on me. I have like a weird like liking towards it, because he's like very, again, heady, no chaser. He calls it for what it is, like it, not like. And that's what Florida wants, because you guys voted for him big time out there, and it was a mopping.
I'm somewhat of a fan, but not really. Like, I have mixed feelings about him.
Yeah, it could be what it is, but he's growing on me. And then there was an issue that happened, I guess, last month. the whole thing with Black history and the queerness, and they were trying to, like, sneak that in. And I talked about it with my old podcast crew, and he thought he was being racist. I'm like, no, I'm seeing this. I know what it is in law, because this is what BLM did back in the day. They were using Black paint to use other agendas, which worked, and we didn't even know what they did to, like, years later. This is going to happen. And this is what I have an issue with that particular community. Every time they go to some oppression or push an agenda, they always go to the Black community. And that's the part that enrages me. You know, they don't do it in Latino month. They don't do it in Women's month. They don't even do it in their month. You know, there's been a lot of Black, queer, gay people that put a lot of things, but they weren't fighting for queer rights. They were fighting for Black history month and Black history stuff, per se.
Right.
But they don't push them in the month of June. So now what they're doing is they're trying to underhand the situation and push them like that. So now whoever activist you could think of top that did, you know, conscious decision, Black things, now they're going to push. And he was gay also, and he was also a queer person. I'm like, yeah, but that was his own privacy. That's the moment. That was his privacy. And two, he wasn't fighting with those agendas. And if he did, let's push it for the month of June. But they don't want to do that. They want to do it in that day, for they could be like, well, you should go to support it, because, like, the Black struggle is like the gay struggle. They're, like, not even close, and they're doing that again. So I'm glad he put a halt to that. I'm so happy. And, you know, again, if you want to celebrate, you know, a lifestyle, by all means, go for yours. Just, one, don't push it down my throat, and do it when whatever time you guys are being celebratory within your section. You know what I mean? And we can all get along.
Well, but we don't need to be exposing our private choices. Why is that? Since when do we develop or base our respect toward people based on who they sleep with or what they identify as? And we're making it seem as if we have to carry a sign with our pronouns. Because people need to, I mean, that's not, who cares? Like, honestly, you are a person and you should be respected, period, no matter what you call yourself. And you should be okay with someone approaching you and calling you whatever you look like. You know, you look like a he, you're a he, buddy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I don't have time or space in my mind to right now have to remember every single pronoun of every single person that I am going to come across. It's just not a thing, and it's just not realistic. And we really need to accept that. And we are not accepting it because, again, we're challenging nature. We're challenging reality. And like you said, you know, DeSantis is pushing back. I don't agree with all his pushing back. I do agree with the fact that DeSantis is so smart, dude. DeSantis is not stupid. He's got a strategy and he knows how to play to what he wants. And I know he's going to aggressively pursue whatever his goal is, whether it's the presidency, and which I'm sure ultimately it is at one point. Whenever that's going to be, I'm pretty sure that's his ultimate goal. But he is really aggressive and smart about his moves. I think that he is pushing back with this whole gender situation, and I appreciate it. But I also think that it can backfire, you know? But then again, you kind of have to be that harsh, because these people do not back down. They don't. So how do you push back in a gentle way? You can't. You kind of have to be an asshole about it, because there's no other way to get through and say, you know, because you're like, excuse me, let's do this orderly, and nobody listens to you. At one point, you have to just slap the table and say, look, you know, listen the fuck up. So it's like, I just think that, you know, the man has its pros. He has his cons. And we have to take it for what it is. He's a politician. I don't trust any politician, no matter who they are. So I'm always cautiously, you know, proceed with caution. That's always my thing. Like, I'm not crazy about any of them. So I do appreciate he's doing a lot of great things that I am aligning with. But I'm waiting for him to prove me wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm always like, I'm waiting for you.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good luck on that situation, especially with him. Cause I know he's a live wire, and he's really trying his hardest to be like Trump 2.0, just by the way he moves. And even with his real attitude. So I see where he's going with this. And he has a little bit of momentum right now. So
yeah, he does.
I still think Trump is gonna take it, but for now he's giving him a run for his money.
He's getting and he's enjoying it.
Yeah, for the moment. For the moment. All right. So I was trying to have this conversation with Nelson, but I can't get in contact with him. Hopefully when he comes up, you know, we could do an episode together. But I had a conversation with the professor, and you know, if you catch the episode, we talked about this. What is the deal with Cuban progressives? especially in Florida. Like, I'm trying to figure them out, and I want to have them on my show to like have like a non-biased conversation with them, because I'm really trying to figure them out, because they claim they're for us, but then like they move funny. And the best example, I put this on a meme. Like, the best example I could give Cuban progressive is like somebody who's saying, I'm against racism, I'm against white supremacy, but then scream, all lives matter. That's the way I look at them.
I think Cuban progressives, well, you know what? Maybe, I don't know how this is going to sound. They're just a product of the public school system. That's basically it. And so based on that, just draw your own conclusions. I mean, usually there are people who were born here who have Cuban family who really haven't been vocal enough within their circles to tell their stories and raise children that actually stand up for what is right and know where they come from. A lot of these people don't know enough about who they are because their grandparents or parents didn't really talk about it. They just lived their lives and forgot about Cuba. And that's the danger of just moving on and not talking about where you come from and not talking about the struggle and not talking about the racism and not talking about the coming in the raft and not talking about how we got kicked out of Cuba. And, you know, it's not that you drill children with the information constantly, but you do have to create a culture where this is known in your household and it's passed down. Because if not, then you have Cuban progressives who have no idea where we come from, have no idea what the story is. And they're still saying that Cubans had plantations when Fidel came to power. And I'm like, are you serious? And it's not only Americans, Black Americans, White Americans, whatever color Americans, it's Cuban Americans saying, oh, because you had plantations, now mad, you're mad, gusanos. I'm like, dude, you're a Cuban American? And you don't know when slavery was abolished in Cuba? And you don't know that plantations were not operating, right? I get like aggravated because I'm like, you are a product of the public school system. You were raised here and your story, your history depended solely on the public school system and what they taught you. But obviously your parents didn't teach you the history. They didn't teach you the struggle. And all you had to rely on was somebody else's history and you have none of your own.
I'm glad you mentioned that because there's a lot of them here in Boston. I came across a lot of Cuban Americans and legit, like their parents never told them their story. And it goes back like from the 70s, probably 70s, even late 60s. All they know is they came over here and that was it. And I get it too, because sometimes parents don't want to tell that story. There's a lot of traumatic stuff going on. So you got that part of it. Cause my mom, it wasn't too recently, like I got like the full story. I got bits and pieces. All I know was bad. And that was it. But you got a lot of and the funny thing about it, like that generation, they not only did they leave Cuba and didn't tell them the story, they wanted to be Americanized so bad and have like acceptance from America that I said, okay, forget, get the acceptance. I'm passables are looking like this. I'm just gonna be in America and American, and my kids are gonna be American. And I mean, they were even telling, you know, once the other wave came, like my parents, they were even telling like them, like, you know, my kid didn't even speak English. He speaks full blown English, like on some bragging stuff that they only speak one language.
Yeah.
That's how insane it was during back in those days. And I was coming across Cubans that really didn't know like their history like that. And I got caught slipping. Two episodes ago, I told the story and it was on Instagram, and for whatever reason, Instagram took it off. I put it back on, and now I'm back to the, you know, 30-second thing that I can't view my stuff again. But I'll say it again. I went to Mexico. I made a mistake of buying a T-shirt. I was 23 years old. No one told me about Che. They just told me. No one told me. You know,
we all slip, though, Mike. We all slip at one point. I wore some sort of hat that looked like a Che hat at some point. And, you know, I was what? I don't even remember how old I was. And I don't think I'd ever been back to Cuba yet, like to visit. And I didn't understand why my dad didn't like Che. Like my dad told me, but I didn't really understand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He would get insulted. He wouldn't go into places where there was a Che picture on the wall. Yeah. But I was like, Dad, stop making a big deal, because I hadn't taken the moment to actually look it up, but I knew that my dad felt that way. So at one point, as an adult, as a responsible adult, I was like, wait a minute, let me do this on my own and see why my dad feels. And then you find that information. See, don't get me wrong, the public school system, I'm not saying that everybody in the public school system is ignorant about important things in the world, because you are not supposed to know about everything in the world. But damn it, if you have a child, teach them your history. Don't let the public school system teaches you the basics of what the world is and the nation is. It's up to us to teach our children where we come from, whether we're Cuban, whether we're Asian, whether we're, you know, or Oriental, wherever you're from. You really do need to instill that in the kids, because even if they don't pay attention to it or they brush it off, at some point in time, they're going to want to research and they're going to remember what your position was, and they're going to have some sort of breaking point in order to do more research. But if they have nothing, all they have to rely on is what they've been told. And so we really do need to be more proactive in just letting them know who we are. A lot of children have no idea who their grandparents were and what their struggle was. Like you said, they want to become Americanized and they want to forget. And that's understandable, but look at the results.
Yeah. And long story short, I blame my uncle because he set me up, because I was in Mexico resident with his behind, and he's a full-blown commie. There's no way getting around it. He's that. And he worked with his chest. But I bought the shirt in front of him, and my mom was anti that. So I bought the shirt and he didn't even give me heads up. Like, you know, maybe you don't want to buy that in front of your mom's, because you know she might feel a certain way. He was like, you sure you want to rock that? I'm like, yeah, it looks revolutionary. What you think? I look high in these streets, and plus I got some sneakers. And he let me fall bad. He let me fall. So I had that shirt. I rocked it at the airport. My mom picked me up, and I had the shirt. My mom saw it. She like, and she cussed me out. Luckily, it was midnight, so no one heard that kind of yelling. So I'm like, I'm trying to be a revolution, mom, because, you know, that's what they taught me. She's like, no, take it off. I'm like, well, I'll get arrested for a decent exposure. Can I at least go outside? Go. And then, like, you know, she's like, you don't know what you just did? I'm like, no, just tell me what I did. So she gave me a whole yelling thing. She called my dad. My dad was, like, angry, but it was more calm than that. But it was my grandfather that really sat me down, calm and collected, and could be like, all right, this is what went down, this is that. And I'm like, yo, y'all never told me. Right. And I read one book of him, but the way the book, I was so young when I read the book, but I remember when I read the book, they made him look not evil or bad, more of a complex character, like he was trying to do good things, but he ended up being evil in the end, and then he was trying to be right again. So he was like in a war within good and evil within himself. That's the way the book was being perceived when I copped it. And plus, I'm a hip-hop nerd, so when you see this hip-hop artist rocking the shade shirt, I saw Jay-Z with a shirt, I see all these artists situations with their shirt, okay, you think this is what is it. But then once you know, my family got to the nitty gritty, be like, no, this is what really happened. I'm like, oh, next time you want to give me this, give me some game, and this way don't make me look like an ass when I come back from the freaking airport, you don't yell at me. So that was my wake up call.
We all have our moments.
Oh, jeez. So yeah, about to wrap it up here, but before I get out of here, I follow your contact, and I gotta ask you this: were you like an inspiring, like, actress before you end up doing this contact thing? Like, did you like the theater or play, or was there something you wanted to do, like, behind the scenes of the camera? Because I've been seeing videos with you with wigs on and like these like 1930s Marilyn Monroe's kind of outfit, where, you know, where you try to do like a little contact on your YouTube. So what's your shenanigans about that? Because I could relate. I took theater, which I'm just a waste of a tall height, so.
Yeah, I experiment with everything, you know what I'm saying? Like, in terms of content creation, I like to experiment, and I just put it out there with comedy, with, you know, impersonating different characters, character creation, just stuff like that, you know? So yeah, I've done acting, I've done nothing crazy, nothing big, but yeah, here and there, and I've done freelance photography, and just anything that tells us that anything that gives me the ability of telling a story, you know. Yeah. And I'll most likely experiment with that, and so yeah, that's basically it. I do certain characters that I kind of just play around with, you know, and nothing that I want to take to a next level and develop. It's just an exercise of can I do that? And what would it be like if I did? And there, and I do it. And that's it. That's basically it.
Yeah. I got inspired. I caught the acting bug a couple of years ago. So I will be in a movie whenever the hell the movie wants to be dropped or whatever from the director, whatever the case may be. So nice. I was able to, I got picked to do this movie, but then like I saw the script and he was looking for a Latino character in this thing. Yeah. And there was like the first, like he let me take complete control of the character. Cause it was supposed to be like some Puerto Rican, whatever the case may be. So I'm like, can I be Cuban? He's like, be whatever the hell you want. Just, I need something to speak Spanish. So go. So I did that. And he actually gave me a chance to write a script. That was the first time I actually wrote something down. Cause usually like I used to do like spoken words. I do here and then or whatever the case may be. So I wrote it. He saw it. He's like, yo, you should like do more of this. And I'm like, I didn't think I was good enough to do scripts like that. I just, you know, I just go behind the mic and just rant. But, you know, if I could do this, then I'll mess with it. So I got a whole scene there. So if you be able to chance to watch the movie, you're going to catch a lot of Cuban hints in the movie that, you know, hopefully y'all, if you're Cuban, you'll catch it, see where I was going with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I play a cop. So I'm going to play a cop of that movie. So
law enforcement.
I become the man in that movie. So it was really dope. So I got a chance to you know, get the acting bug. And I've been trying to, like, do that again, but I'm doing this and then I'm doing the other couple of things. So I'm trying to like, I've been checking out for a couple of scripts and I've done a couple of auditions myself. So if this activism thing ain't popping up, I'm going to Hollywood and selling out.
I'll
join the Illuminati and then see what happens from there on. See what kind of blood sacrifice
you, when you win your Oscar, you could just scream Padre Vida.
I'm waiting. I will. Cause I know Hollywood tends to lead a certain way. So
right.
It reminds me of you remember what happened to the actor Richard Gere?
When?
This was back in like, I want to say 2001.
I don't remember.
Well, he said something to the effect like free Tibet. Cause he was very big on that activism with involved Tibet and fee and all that stuff. He was banned for like 15 years. Like was 15 he? Or 20. He was banned. He just recently got invited again. And, you know, they also got to give him this. I don't know if they apologize or whatever the case may be, but it is that.
Because he got political?
He got political with it, but he got political to a way that like it affected their money with China. So you don't want to do that. And I forgot what I was watching something on TV. And it's like unbelievable how China has a strong hold on like all these like entertainment companies, whether it's Hollywood or even the NBA, and everybody's just afraid to speak.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's gonna be the plan. Get an Oscar, scream Pati Vida, and then be banned by the Oscars. And hopefully America TV could catch me and do some stuff for them later on. And
somebody on the side.
I don't know, be a dollar sidekick or something. I don't know. Whatever the case may be, man. Hey, look, I saw the episode. I went back and heard the episode with Montana, and I know he has a dream or a plan to try to like do something like movie wise, because I know he's a comic book head. So like once I find where the hell he is, I'll be like, yo, I want a role, buddy. I wanna be a mutant or something.
Want to be the crew?
Give me something, man. Give me some kind of superpowers, whatever the case may be. Morph, transform. Give me something. Let me fly.
He's got a good story.
I want to speak to him more about it, but I know he talked about it briefly with you. So yeah. Once I find him, we'll definitely break bread and get that thing popping. But yes. Yeah. Spanglish, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Thank you so much. You're doing the good work, man. Keep at it. And I appreciate this so much because this is an awesome space and we align on many different things. And dude. This is amazing. We got to do this again and, you know, catch you on Instagram. But I know that when I do something and I need it out there, I can count on you and those like you, you know, that got my back and, you know, we got yours. So that's what it's about.
Well, you got a buddy here in Massachusetts. You know, we're both on the same page fighting the good old struggle. And, you know, God willing, we're both alive. We'll definitely see a free Cuba. And, you know, we'll get that regime out of there. You know, the professor told me this joke on the show that he said that Cuba's been a failed state. We all just missed the email. We missed the memo.
Make it that memo.
We missed the memo. So it's already failing. It's right there in his final leg. We just missed the memo.
It is.
So it's on his final leg, and I sense it. You know what? We'll talk later on. But thank you. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you for being on the podcast. You know, keep pushing that content. Keep having no filter. You know, salute on being a wife, a mother, a woman of God, and keep pushing the truth, not your truth, the truth, because you are spreading the truth out there. And you know, you got a crew out here. So whatever the case would be, we got your back out here. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Yes. So this has been the Ruckus Podcast, Organized Chaos. I had another hostile Cuban takeover. I'm about to change it to something else because I've been having too many Cubans within the show right here. And it's like, it's on. That's the way I'm doing it out here, man. It's a hostile takeover, and I'm bringing the whole Cuban crew with me from Florida to Jersey to New York. It's on, you know, and it's not going to stop.
Yeah. Overload.
Yeah, man. So until next time, I'll catch y'all next time. I'm out. Peace.